all time now.
That is it, my Sandow.
One more time now.
Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio, and we apologize for the technical difficulties. We are back. We are black, and we are going to shift gears, and we're going to be playing some music from some ska music from Jamaica, from England, and from India. believe it or not. So let us begin with Rudy, a message to you.
Stop your running about. It's time you straighten right out. Stop your running around, making trouble in the town. Ah, Rudy, a message to you, Rudy, a message to you. You're growing older each day. Want to think of your future, or you might wind up in jail, then you will suffer. Ah, Rudy, a message to you, Rudy, a message to you. Thank you.
Stop your fooling around, messing up our future. Time to straighten right out. You should have wound up in jail. Modi, a message to you. Modi, a message to you. You stop your murdering now. When Amit Shah was your killer, SIT was your friend, you should have wound up in jail. Modi, a message to you. Modi, a message to you. Now, with your fancy pants campaign, Ambani money in your pocket, creating problems in town. Modi, a message to you. Modi, a message to you. Modi,
Baragani and Nanga Def for all of you Wolof speakers in Senegal, the Gambia, and Mauritania. And we were listening to the Ska Vengers, a song called Modi, a message to you. And that group is out of India, and Ska music is big all over the world. And that song is dedicated to the young man who might become the head of state of India, Modi, who is a Hindu nationalist, and that's going to be interesting if they seize power in India. And I guess the elections, there's 815 million people voting in India, and the election should be, they have already been held, but it's going to take so long to count the votes. But the Hindu nationalists, nothing against Hinduism itself, but the Hindu nationalists are not a nice set of people, and he might seize power. We also heard from the Specials, and they did a song called A Message to You, Rudy, which is the song that was, the song Moody, A Message to You, was taken from, and we kicked the show off with the first rendition of A Message to You, Rudy. And Diasporic Music continues. We're going to take you now to Mali.
It's now time to order your signed copy of Omali Ishatela's new book, The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Chairman Omali's groundbreaking political analysis shows the way forward for people looking for answers during this period of crisis for imperialism, a crisis that offers great opportunity for colonized peoples everywhere. This latest book by the founder and leader of the African Socialist International and the Uhuru Movement costs $29.99 and will come off the press this spring. Order now at burningspearmarketplace.com or by calling 727-824-5700, and your copy will be personally signed by the author. Call 727-824-5700 or visit burningspearmarketplace.com today to pre-order your commemorative signed copy of The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Uhuru means freedom.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
Hey, Aisha, hold on. I'll walk with you. You know, this is going to be a great class.
I know. Yet I'm still trying to figure out how I can exactly use these skills.
The Uhuru Movement.
The Uhuru Movement?
Yes, the Uhuru Movement. They offer great opportunities to utilize these type of skills in the most meaningful ways. I mean, writers, photography, graphic design, journalism, videography, video editing, even radio broadcasting.
Wow, sounds great. I'm assuming you have to be pretty advanced.
Not at all. I mean, although experienced is welcome, it's not mandatory. You know, the Uhuru Movement, they will train you. Log on and sign up today at uhurunews.com, where your skills are wanted and needed. Whether reporting on local news, writing for an international newspaper, or hosting your own radio show, the Uhuru Movement is the place for you. Do you have a desire to work in sales, marketing, or administration? Do you have the talent for audio engineering? Log on and sign up today, uhurunews.com. Not just explaining the world, but changing the world.
Thank you, brother. I will definitely follow up today.
And hopefully you'll become a member like I am.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Maitha, host of African International, a two-hour mix featuring the very best songs from throughout the African
throughout
world.
The African
We're talking
Afro.
About Afro.
No.
Afro.
Soft, soft, soft.
Together they can't break us, we are strong.
R&B, R&B. Hip-hop.
If they ever met you, I bet you it's undisputable. The way you shine, so black, so beautiful.
That's right, you're invited to the party, African International. Mondays 9 to 11 a.m. And again on Saturdays 8 to 10 a.m. Pacific Time.
Right here on
AhuruRadio.com.
Now she'll go her way.
Are you a lover of romantic love songs of yesteryear? Then tune in to Golden Sunday Sounds with me, Ron Bob Semple, every Sunday from 7 until 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Uhuru Radio Network. That's Sunday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Golden Sunday Sounds.
So why, I, so why, so why, so why, I, so why, so why, why.
Mamadara surula hikone bina kumasa Nebe sarala muzohula hatununya muzohula kula mogelema Ibe kono ta segena kide ngolo segena hakika no la mo abada Kataka la mola ibo di la mola kika no tono dun abada Sa ah 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 So what? So what? So
thank you. Johnny la modenye. Johnny la modenye.
Uhuru, you are listening to Zion Folk Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Owens Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. We were listening to the music of Fatuma Jarari out of Mali. And joining us on the line from Toronto, Canada, is John Artis, who was with Reuben Carter every step of the way. And John Artis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Norman. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very, very well. I wanted to I watched the commentary last night of the film Hurricane by Norman Jewettson. And Norman Jewettson basically said in the commentary that you are the unsung or the untold hero of the Reuben Hurricane Carter story. And a lot of people, we know we lost Reuben on the 20th of April, but we wanted to talk about Reuben. But before we talk about Reuben, I want to let people know who John Artis is.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to get you to give me a brief bio of who you are and what you're doing today.
Oh well, I'm currently I'm sitting in Reuben's home. I still have some things that I have to do that he delegated to me prior to his passing. Basically, I'm just a I met Reuben when I was 19 years old, and at that time, this incident occurred, and when we were picked up, the police officers, who knew me very well as a star athlete in the city of Paterson, New Jersey, wanted me to say that Reuben was the perpetrator of the crime, and I refused to do that, which I knew to be a lie. I served 15 years along with Reuben, and during that time, I was approached different times to simply sign a statement to say that Reuben was the perpetrator and that I was either there and or knew about it, and they would release me, and I continued to refuse to do that for 15 years. I was released on parole in 1981 after I saved the lives of some guards during a 1971 riot. They let me out at my first appearance to the parole board, and 4 years later, Reuben came out. After leaving the institution, I started working with youth. I created my own program. It was called CYA, or Creating Youth Awareness. And I was working in the different spectrum from Reuben with regard to trying to keep people out of jail. I worked with the youth. He worked with people who were already incarcerated. And I was informed a couple of years ago that Reuben was dying, that he had a terminal prostate cancer. So I dropped everything that I was doing, and I came to Toronto, and I stayed with him and cared for him for 2 years until he passed on Easter morning. And
yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's pretty much who John Artis is.
Now, you say you were a track and field man, basketball, football, or you like Paul Robeson, you were all around her?
Well, I played football and basketball, but track became my best sport. I won a scholarship to college and was waiting to attend. Back in 1966, and yeah, but track, I ran hurdles. That was my best event.
Did you the 120 highs?
Yeah, the 120 highs and 180 lows.
I tried to run the 180 lows, but this is an interview about you. But it was a good friend of mine by the name of Charles Burnett, great filmmaker. He did the film Killer Sheep. He was my idol. He ran the 120 highs in high school. But
right.
you and Reuben, were you incarcerated in the same place? Were you in contact with Reuben when you were in the Slammers together, or were you in separate places?
Well, only for about 2.5 years, I think it was. He and I were in the same institution. Other than that, we weren't. I spent the first 6 months with him in Trenton State Prison. Then I left and transferred to another facility, Rahway State Prison, up, which was closer to home for my dad to come visit me. And 2 years later, I saw Reuben. He came to Rahway, and we were together there for about 2 years, and then I left and went to another facility after the riot, when I was starting to be rewarded for my activity and efforts during the riot and saving the guards' lives. Mm-hmm. And from that, after that point, I didn't see him again until our second trial, which was in 1976, and after that, I didn't see him again until 1985.
Were you guys able to communicate while you were separated, or they kept you complete? Could you correspond, or was there any way to communicate, or you just were separated completely?
Oh, well, when we were separated, we would send messages back and forth to guys who were transferring from wherever we were to wherever the other person was, you know, through the grapevine.
Understand.
We would communicate that way.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. I'm on the line with John Artis, who was in prison, or was arrested and in prison with Reuben Hurricane Carter. Now, how do you feel the press has treated Mr. Carter? And since you've been, I know you've done interviews with everybody in, that you can think of. How do you feel that the press, first of all, in Canada and internationally, has treated the passing of Mr. Carter?
For the most part, I mean, they're covering what they know. Reuben's work with Innocence International and AIDWIC, that's the extent of their knowledge of the man. And it's been pretty fair. There will always be the naysayers and the non-believers and those people who have their opinions of whether he was innocent or guilty, but that's irrelevant and immaterial as far as we're concerned. But it's been pretty fair. Actually, it was pretty good to be acknowledged internationally.
Mm-hmm. How did have you heard any had any contact with South Africa since? Mr. Carter actually went to South Africa in. You know, there was a cultural boycott of South Africa, but Reuben went before there was a cultural boycott, and he actually worked with Steve Biko. So there was no word out of nothing out of South Africa.
No, I haven't received any type of communications from South Africa at all with regard to Reuben.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I had the honor of meeting Mr. Carter in 1992. I met him at the screening of the Malcolm X film, and you know, I spent a little bit of time, but you spent a lot of your time with Reuben. I mean, you were with him when he passed away. But musically, you know, he used to be really crazy about Clyde McFadder, and I found out that Clyde McFadder was had a kid with Ruth Brown, and Ruth Brown in the Hurricane movie, they played Clyde McFadder and Ruth Brown's songs back to back in the film.
Uh-huh.
And in the film Why Do Fools Fall in Love, Clyde McFadder and Ruth Brown's son plays Tony Williams singing Only You with the Platters, when, you know, with Holly Berry's in there, but that's actually Clyde McFadder and Ruth Brown's son that's in that film, and I think he sings with the, well, he still sings today. But musically, you were telling me that Reuben used to play, what was that song by Otis Redding you said that Reuben used to wear out?
Oh, jeez.
These Arms of Mine?
These Arms of Mine. That was his favorite song. He would play that play that song repeatedly. As a matter of fact, he'd leave his CD on repeat for that song. But Reuben liked, yeah, liked that. He loved Otis Redding, period.
But you know, in 1967, I was checking out, in 1967, Otis Redding was voted by one of the Melody Maker, which is a British magazine, the greatest singer in the world. He eclipsed Elvis Presley at that particular time, so I guess Reuben was in good company.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Otis was really popular in black communities, for sure. He and his band were noted for great shows, and even up until he made his last song, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, shortly thereafter, he did die when his plane crashed. But, yeah, but Reuben just loved Otis. Anything that Otis did was fine with Reuben.
And you said you were more of a Parliament Funkadelic man, right? Am I correct in saying that?
Well, yeah, I always liked up-tempo music. I wasn't much of a ballad man, being a young man. You know, I needed that kind of music that gave me the opportunity to dance, because I used to love to dance, and Reuben would get a kick out of that, watching me take the floor in clubs and stuff like that. Someday, as a matter of fact, they had a nickname for me in Passaic County. They called me Dancing Boy, and a lot of women would refuse to dance with me because they thought I was going to show them up, but I love to dance.
But, you know, there was a thing about Reuben Carter that I used to like Reuben, because Reuben used to love to laugh, and, you know, contrary to popular belief, you know, he was a very humorous kind of guy, don't you think?
Well, the Reuben was humorous because Reuben, in keeping with his belief, which was dare to dream, and he was proof of the results that could happen when you dare to dream. So he was very much into enjoying life, enjoying being alive, and enjoying helping people. Reuben was a happy man, and he was doing what he wanted to do. He went where he wanted to go, and he did what he wanted to do. You know, Reuben was just happy, and one of the things he liked about me, he says I could make him laugh, and I used to do stuff all the time to make him laugh. All the time.
I remember him playing Santa Claus one year, and they had brought up some youth from New Jersey, some children from New Jersey, and it was some of my family was there, and Reuben did his Santa Claus thing, and it was just funny watching. I had never seen a Santa Claus with that much melanin, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Well, you know, Reuben liked kids. He liked people overall, but he really liked kids. He enjoyed. Reuben had a heart of gold. He would give you the shirt off his back if you needed it to assist you or help you. He would do that. He didn't mind giving. He was very giving.
And you, the time you spent with him during his last days, I know he was still pretty strong during that period, wasn't he?
Well, that was being here for those 2 years is the longest that Reuben and I had ever spent time together, besides the yearly 1 week vacation. I would come to Canada and spend that time with him and such, but we really got to know each other, and we had a good time together, and up until he was unable to travel, when he became bedridden and his cancer started to get the upper hand on him, but we had a blast.
Were you able to travel with him anywhere internationally?
Well, we went to
the U.S. together, in the U.S.
Well, when I first arrived here, he couldn't walk, and that was in 2011, October 2011 when I got here, he couldn't walk. But he said that there was a international wrongful conviction conference going on in Perth, Australia, and that he wanted to go. So I said, well, what you going to do? What do you want to do? He says, I want to get up out of his bed and walk. I said, well, get up and walk. And he did. So he got up, and we worked on his physical therapy, getting his legs strong and such, and we were able to travel to Perth, Australia together, as well as quite a few places in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Did you move around with him very much when he was boxing? You met him when he was 19, right?
Yeah, I didn't know him. No, I didn't move around with him. I didn't know Ruben. I didn't. A chance meeting at a friend's home a couple of weeks before the incident occurred, and we were stopped, was all I knew about Ruben. I didn't know him at all. And when the police questioned me for 17 hours down at police headquarters and gave me a lie detector test, I had no knowledge of him. He was a boxer. I wasn't interested in boxers. If he were a football player, that would have been something different, or a basketball player, or a track person. But
right.
Boxing wasn't my sport, so I wasn't interested in that. And but I didn't know him other than the fact that I had watched him on TV box, which to me was no big deal.
Did you ever meet his father or his parents at any time?
Well, of course I met them during after we were questioned prior to our arrest. I met his mom and his dad. His wife, his daughter, and some of his relatives.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ruben's father was a deacon or a preacher. I know he told me that he had spent a lot of time on that gospel circuit. When I say the gospel circuit, I mean his father went to, he was Baptist, went to those revivals. Did you ever talk about that?
Correct. His dad was, at one point, his father was a pastor, and then he became a deacon at a church, and that's where he culminated his life as a deacon. But pretty much all of the men in Reuben's family were in some fashion or form connected with the church as either a pastor or a deacon.
Now, from a religious point of view, Ruben was, he was brought up in the Baptist church, and I guess he flirted with Islam. He took the name Saladin
Muhammad.
And then at the end of his life, he was, very eclectic in terms of he was. He was not into organized religion at all, I believe. What kind of conversation did you have with Mr. Carter about the whole religious thing?
Well, we never discussed religion, but Ruben could quote, quote scripture. He would utilize some of the examples of scripture to trying to hammer in or hone in on a topic that he was talking about. But Ruben was religious in his own way. It wasn't it wasn't necessary for him to attend a church, but he was very, very knowledgeable of religious rites and books, the Holy Quran and the Holy Bible.
Right, because I know that Fred Hampton. Never met Fred Hampton, but I know he was very. Used to study preachers because the preachers could move people, and I guess most of us grew up many of us grew up in a Christian situation where we heard the Bible. A lot of people, I never read it myself, but a lot of people were into that. So I guess Ruben was in that, could be categorized as one of those type of guys or people, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Reuben didn't particularly care for the hypocritical people that alleged to be Christians, but didn't follow the teachings of the Bible. So he would distance himself from people of that nature. And so much so that, I mean, we were preparing for 2 years for his death, and he told me once he passed, well, he wanted to be cremated immediately and not have any type of services or memorials or tributes or anything of that nature. And that's what I did. So
that was reported in the news that Reuben wanted no burial, no memorial, and to be cremated. That was his wish, which you, of course, honored.
Yes. Well, he didn't want it because he didn't want people that he didn't associate with or have any interactions with to be telling lies, as he would say, so they would be standing over him lying in death when they wouldn't associate or talk to him in life.
Right, right. Now, he loved Clyde McFadder. I remember he talked about Clyde McFadder, but I was reading this book. There's a book called The Triumph of Sam Cooke, Dream Boogie, by Peter Goralnik. And it was my understanding that Clyde McFadder was a real human rights man, and he was the one that pulled Sam Cooke's coat to the struggle of I shouldn't pull his coat. I mean, I guess anybody that's grew up, anybody that's black anywhere in the
South from that area, we all knew. I grew up in segregation.
Yeah, but Clyde McFadder's basically pulled Sam Cooke's coat by saying that, okay, religion is, his father was a preacher, and he didn't like the way, this is, I'm talking about Clyde McFadder, he did not like the way his father treated his mother, and he basically said that religion was a lot of, to quote Clyde McFadder, was a lot of hocus pocus, and Clyde McFadder became a lifelong member of the NAACP. Now we're talking late 50s, early 60s, and for him to be in the NAACP at that time, he might as well have been in the Black Panther Party, as far as the races were concerned. And Reuben, that was his man in terms of musically. He told me he never met Clyde McFadder, but he loved Clyde McFadder's music.
Uh huh. Yeah. Well, at that, I mean, pretty much all of us. Even I was a member, my family was a member of the NAACP. Virtually all blacks at that time joined the NAACP, those that weren't afraid to be associated with it. The racist in the South with regard to the NAACP had given titles to the lettering of the NAACP, not meaning the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, but they called it as niggers, alligators, apes, coons, and possums. They refused to call Dr. Martin Luther King by his appropriate name, and they would call him Dr. Martin Luther Coon. So we were coons and niggers and
spooks
and all of that kind of stuff. Jigaboos, yeah, we were all of those things.
Now, what part of the South did your folks come from?
Virginia, the slave growing state, Virginia.
Was Nat Turner?
Nat Turner, yeah, they still talk about Nat Turner, the white society there. They every year they have an editorial with regard to when Nat Turner had his uprising and would have succeeded had not another slave gone and told his master what was going on.
There was a brother. There's a brother who was Malcolm X's right hand man. He's still in the land of the living. He's about about 90 years old now, but yeah, he was, his father was, he was born in, his people came out of Virginia. I'm trying to think of his name, Dave. I'm having about 5 or 6 months older than you, but I'm having a senior moment right now.
Yeah. That happens.
I'm having a real serious senior moment. And Abdul Razak. Yeah, he came out of his people came out of Virginia. He was Malcolm X's right hand man. Did Reuben ever talk to you about Malcolm?
Different times he would make mention of Malcolm, and different times when they were together or they met, things like that, conversations that they may have had. Not anything in depth.
Right, because I know he did meet Malcolm and spent a little time with Malcolm, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, correct, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did. But he didn't talk extensively about it.
And how long do you plan to stay in? Are you going to go back home and continue your work, or are you going to stay here for a while?
Well, Reuben delegated quite a few things for me to do upon his passing, so I'll take care of those things. I'll probably be in Toronto for the summer or the remainder of the summer anyway. And then after that, after I do those things, then I'll probably be heading back to get close to my people.
Are you going back to Virginia or are you going back to New Jersey?
I'll probably go back to Virginia. I miss the ocean. I was born in Portsmouth, Virginia, which is only like 60 miles from Richmond. It's where Nat Turner did his thing. But I'm not a lake person, and I want to be near the Chesapeake Bay and where it meets the Atlantic Ocean in the area of Portsmouth, Virginia, where I was born. So I'll probably go back down south. Too cold in Canada for me to stay here.
I can relate to that. Have you been to Africa or the Caribbean?
Oh, I've been to the Caribbean. Reuben and I have spent a week or 2 weeks in Jamaica.
We did the
Ocho Rios and Negril and, you know, the Kingston thing down there. He would send for me. He'd give me a ticket. Where you at? What you doing? I don't know. I'm working here. Well, you know, go to the nearest airport, Norfolk International. Go there. There'll be a ticket waiting for you. And come on down here. And I would do that. So we would spend time together like that. But that was always a week or 2 weeks at a time. Unlike the 2 years over the 2 years that I was here in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. But you guys never hit the continent together.
No, we didn't hit. We never hit the continent. He would always say, "Come on up here to Canada, and I'll take care of you." I say, "Yeah, Reuben, but I'm working with these kids down here in Virginia, so I'm not leaving that." So, but had I done that, he probably, I probably would have traveled the continent with him.
All right, sir, we're going to let you go, and we're getting ready to play some music by Sly and Robbie from Kingston, Jamaica. Sly and Robbie, Kingston, Jamaica. They're joined by Gary Scheider, who was from New Jersey, and Bootsy Collins. So we're getting ready to play some funk.
All right.
By some Caribbean and Africans from the Caribbean and the United States. So we'll definitely stay in touch with you, and I will I'll send you a copy of the show.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Norman. I appreciate it.
And I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'm sorry?
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
That I would like to add?
Yeah, anything you'd like to say in summary, in closing?
Well, in closing, the world knew Reuben as either Reuben Carter or the Hurricane or Dr. Carter, but I knew him as the Rube, and only his close intimates and his close personal friends and associates knew him as Rube. So I knew the man outside of the spotlight, and I miss him terribly, but the work goes on. The work must go on. And as he would always say, dare to dream.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Take care
you.
Of yourself. Nice
you
talking
too.
To you. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right.
All right.
And we have been speaking with John Artis, who Norma Jewison said was the unsung hero of the Reuben Hurricane Carter story. And we continue with the music of Sly Robbie Bootsy and the late, great Gary Scheider.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution. We'll be right back.
Dire Sport Music on the Hoo Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. We were playing the music of the group was called Material, but it was really Sly Dunbar on drums. It was Robbie Shakespeare on bass, Sly Drumbar or Robbie Bassbear, and the lead vocalist was the late, great Gary Scheider, the brother with the diaper. If you ever saw Parliament Funkadelic, Gary would open up all, used to open up the show with that song, Wearing His Diaper. And, of course, the great William Bootsy Collins was on guitar. He played guitar on that particular track. And we are going to be speaking with Melinda Francis of from Toronto at 3:30. And right now we're going to take a break and come back with some music from Otis Redding and Papa Wemba. And you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio.
It's now time to order your signed copy of Omali Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Chairman O'Malley's groundbreaking political analysis shows the way forward for people looking for answers during this period of crisis for imperialism, a crisis that offers great opportunity for colonized peoples everywhere. This latest book by the founder and leader of the African Socialist International and the Uhuru Movement costs $29.99 and will come off the press this spring. Order now at burningspearmarketplace.com or by calling 727-824-5700, and your copy will be personally signed by the author. Call 727-824-5700 or visit burningspearmarketplace.com today to pre-order your commemorative signed copy of The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Uhuru means freedom.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
Well, here's education on the water that you should not miss. It's the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise for 6 days from December 14th through the 20th aboard the Carnival Breeze, leaving out of Miami, Florida, and stopping in Grand Turk, Ocho Rios, Jamaica, and Nassau, Bahamas. Edutainment on board will feature O'Malley Ishatela, chairman of the African Socialist International, and yours truly, Ron Bob Simple, with the spirit of Marcus Garvey. For more details and to place your booking for the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, call Freedom Horizons Travel Agency at 866-708-4009. That's 866-708-4009. The exclusive travel agency for the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise. You can also log on to uhurulegacycruise.org. That's uhurulegacycruise.org for itinerary and pricing information. You can call Freedom Horizons today, because if you miss it, you'll regret it. 866-708-4009.
Aisha, hold on. I'll walk with you. You know, this is going to be a great class.
I know. Yet I'm still trying to figure out how I can exactly use these skills.
The Uhuru Movement.
The Uhuru Movement?
Yes, the Uhuru Movement. They offer great opportunities to utilize these type of skills in the most meaningful ways. I mean, writers, photography, graphic design, journalism, videography, video editing, even radio broadcasting.
Wow, sounds great. I'm assuming you have to be pretty advanced.
Not at all. I mean, although experienced is welcome, it's not mandatory. You know, the Uhuru Movement, they will train you. Log on and sign up today at uhurunews.com, where your skills are wanted and needed. Whether reporting on local news, writing for an international newspaper, or hosting your own radio show, the Uhuru Movement is the place for you. Do you have a desire to work in sales, marketing, or administration? Do you have the talent for audio engineering? Log on and sign up today, uhurunews.com. Not just explaining the world, but changing the world.
Thank you, brother. I will definitely follow up today.
And hopefully you'll become a member like I am.
Dice Fork Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Richmond, speaking to you from the not-so-great White North here in Toronto, Canada. And, it's no longer the Great White North because it's, the sun is shining. There's plenty of life. It's real nice out there in Toronto for a change. And we're going to be speaking with Melinda Francis very shortly. But we are continuing to mix up the music and play some black music and letting you know that it is international music. And we had the pleasure of meeting Yusu Endur many, many years ago when he was on tour with Peter Gabriel. And Yusu Endur was really the person that taught me the little bit about the language, the Wolof language, the man who taught me how to say Nanga Def, and we're going to listen to Yusu Endur right now. He's going to be working out on a Tom Bell, Linda Creed song that was made famous by The Spinners, and then we're going to hear from The Spinners featuring the late Purvis Jackson and Felipe Wynn. This is Yusu Endur's Rubber Band Man.
rhythm, grace, and heaven air for one man.
Liberia, and if you see the film about Ali in the fight in with him and George Foreman and Zaire, Felipe Win is very big in that particular film. But Felipe Win is a man you should really keep your eyes on. And joining me on the line from Toronto, Canada, is Belinda Francis, Molly DocuVixen, and she is the owner, filmmaker at DocuVixen. She's also a programmer at Saturday Morning Live on Regent Radio. She also does work with the Vibe Collective on CIUT, and she also does a show called Reggae Artists in Toronto. That's on an internet station, which I let her correct me. But Melinda, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Norman.
Now, what is the name of the reggae show? I want to give them some play, too.
Yes, I have a show that goes on Thursdays, and it's called Artists in the City, and it documents artists of all disciplines in the city of Toronto and worldwide, actually. And it's Roots Reggae Radio, which is an internet station as well.
All right, we wanted to talk about a number of issues today. I guess the first thing is that you have been and are working on a film on Haiti, and I basically wanted you to, you know, let people know what that film, what's the status of that particular film, and how they can help you put that film together.
Yeah, so I've been working on a film around the reconstruction that Haitians have been doing on the ground in Haiti since the earthquake that happened in 2010, January 12th. And it came about in 2010, actually after the earthquake. I was working with a fellow filmmaker, and I was editing a film with him, and he's Haitian, and he was doing a film around street kids in Port-au-Prince, and I was his editor. But that film kind of changed when the earthquake happened, and that sort of kind of went on pause, and he was going down back and forth pretty regularly after the earthquake, and I also was working with a sound designer as well, who is Haitian, who went down for the first time. I approached Michelle, who is my now co-director / camera person, if he wanted to actually do a film around that specifically, because I saw there was a hole in coverage. So of actual, you know, Haitians who were doing the work on the ground. And so it's kind of turned into a long developing film and ongoing kind of story gathering kind of process. We found the resources to get down there in 2011 in February, and we went to the displacement camps and talk to people, and then sort of kind of organically kind of directed us to people who are doing housing initiatives. I've been following a few initiatives, and that keeps kind of growing as the years kind of develop. So the film is a film, but it's also kind of grown into this like ongoing archival of stories, and kind of tracking the development, because there's like two layers. I'm like looking at how resources are being blocked, but also how Haitians kind of get around that and still do the reconstruction work.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. I'm on the line with Melinda Francis, who is a filmmaker and a editor and a radio host and so on and so forth. Now, the Haitian situation is, this is a question I definitely want to ask you. Have you seen any films recently that really captured the Haiti situation? Because I know Danny Glover wanted to do a film on a Toussaint Louverture, and something happened with the money situation. I saw a great film in Los Angeles. I think it came out of France, but it was...
Yeah, it was out of France. Yeah.
How do you see the films that are coming out about Haiti now? Anything positive films or negative films you wanted to let people know about?
Well, there was actually a film just specifically around the earthquake. It's kind of been a lull since, since the year anniversary. There was a film that was called Where'd the Money Go, and it was please forgive me, I forget her name, but it was an American film. And she tracked, it was a woman, and she was tracking where basically the donations go. And it was actually kind of really good basis for that perspective in tracking how, aid money gets delineated and, actually where the money goes. So if people wanted to look at sort of what's out there, there's not really a lot of other ones. There was one that came out about a couple of years ago, which actually screened at Caribbean Tales, and it was by a Haitian American. Her name is Getty Felin, and she did a film around the church that got the big cathedral that got destroyed in Port-au-Prince, and basically people around that, which was really good. And the film is like Broken Stones, that's what it was called,
right.
And Getty Felin, and she's a good filmmaker as well. So I don't have any knowledge of films of people actually doing from the point of view of Haitians, and so that's basically where what my film's about.
Now let's talk about Caribbean Tales, the International Film Festival, and you were 2014. You are actually looking for films to put in that festival, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so I'll give a little background about the festival. I actually got involved in the festival when I came back from Haiti. After I came back and, had all this footage, and I was like, okay, where do I go from now? And Frances Ann Solomon, who is a Toronto Trinidadian filmmaker, and she was promoting a New York festival because Caribbean Tales sometimes have, they've had New York film festivals, which is on pause right now, but she was promoting that, and so I reached out to my crew in New York and said, you should go to this and check it out. And then she reached out to me and said, oh, well, there's going to be a festival in Toronto. Do you want to get involved? And I said, sure. So I've been involved with the festival since that time. I was an incubator participant, and the incubator is a really, really, really exciting thing for Caribbean filmmakers. It's like a training program for filmmakers to actually package their film and bring it to international markets. So I went through that process, and then I got involved with the festival, and 2 years later I'm the associate director. So right now there's a call out to all films around the Caribbean and the Caribbean diaspora, and also the African diaspora worldwide. So the deadline is June 1st. It's been extended. So if people want to apply, we welcome. There's no fee, so people just send us your films.
No fee. Most film festivals, in order to get in film festivals, you have to pay something. I mean, yeah.
No, there's no fee. We know like how it is to make a film in the Caribbean and the African diaspora, so how hard it is to make a film, so we've kept it free for a while. So
all right.
People have films. The only thing is that you have to have an online link. It's paperless. So, but if you need more information, you can email us at caribbeantales.com. @gmail.com. We're going through the programming process. And it takes place. We have screening events all through the summer, starting with the carnival here. And then we have our main festival, which is September 3rd is our opening, and it goes all the way to September 13th. And it's in conjunction with, it's alongside the Toronto International Film Festival, and we do that specifically because the whole world is here, and it's an opportunity for filmmakers to pitch their stories to the international market.
Now, there is, there's been tons and tons of film about, and the enslavement of African people. But I've noticed, like, some of the films about enslaved Africans that have come from the Caribbean are quite different from the Hollywood film, a lot of the mainstream films. For example, a lot of the films that come out of Cuba, Africans always win, and there is a filmmaker, I think he's out of Guadeloupe, by the name of Christian Lara. I'm trying to put you in contact with him.
Yeah.
He did a film, I think it was Guadeloupe 1801, I think is the name of it. That was, I saw that last year at the Pan-African Film Festival. That was one of the most powerful films that I have ever seen. Have you been trying to get any, just talk about the type of films that you are looking for.
What we're looking for, I mean, we're pretty open with programming, as long as it's authentically coming from a Caribbean and African diaspora voice. So we're looking for authentic stories. So any films that kind of fit into that kind of paradigm, that's what we usually are looking for. And we're also, like, the film festival, Caribbean Tales, is more than a film festival. It's also sort of, working towards creating, growing a film industry within the region, within the Caribbean and African industries. So,
you're talking about distribution as well as TV.
Yeah. Right? So it's not just about screening films, but it's also, creating filmmakers that can sustain an industry. So it's a little bit more complicated, because also I wanted to let people know we also have an incubator program that we're looking for participants as well, and it takes place during the festival as well, and it's like a boot camp for filmmakers, and they go through a training process. It's pretty intensive. It's like for 4 days, and they end up pitching their projects. And it's in a very supportive environment with other, filmmakers around them. And training filmmakers to be able to package their films and actually do that work. So I don't know if that really answered your question.
Yeah,
the question. And that's also we're looking for people. The deadline for that is also June 15th. So if people are interested, please email me at caribbeantales@gmail.com.
Now, I have this is kind of like a it's a debate that's going on among African filmmakers. There's a whole question of financing a film, West One. Then there's a question of distribution. And I heard this, there was a big debate at Esalen Bookstore in Los Angeles where people were arguing that we need financing. And we do need financing. When I say we, I'm talking about African filmmakers, wherever they are. And the question, I think, was brought up that, we needed finances, so therefore we should go to Nigeria or we should go to South Africa. They have funds, so on and so forth. And then the issue of, if it was Charles Burnett was there, and he brought up, even if you get the money,
the whole question of distribution is key. It's like we have to deal with, you know, how we get our films into, you know, theaters. And first of all, America is not the whole world, or North America is not the whole world. What are your ideas on funding and distribution? How do you come down on those two issues?
Well, I mean, making a film is such a long process, and yes, it's expensive to make a movie. And once you are able to sort of gather the support to actually make the movie, you have to then think about, you know, how you're going to get it to the audience. So, I mean, there's different ways of doing that, and there's different things, but yeah, like getting your films into theaters in certain markets, for example, in North America it's a very overwhelming kind of process. And distribution, it is a problem. that's the reason why, you know, Frances Ann, started Caribbean Tales Worldwide Distribution, because, you know, after experience of making all these films and having a library of films, there was no one really distributing that content. So, and I think it's also an issue of, like, you know, infrastructure within the region to be able to actually screen as well. Because, I mean, there's people that want to watch the content, but it's being able to get your film either on TV or on in theaters. Now, the web is actually kind of there's an opening there. Nowadays you can actually have your own, your own channel. So it's an opening. I mean, there's a lot of factors that now are slowly closing that, but I think it's something that, you know, if filmmakers kind of work together, you could kind of create space within that.
Now, in terms of the internet, is there a way to get paid if your film is on the World Wide Web? Has anyone figured out one out how to get compensated for that?
Well, that's a problem too, because everybody needs content. Everybody needs stories. Everybody needs something to actually put up there. But it is harder to actually recoup your money online, because
right.
People view, you know, films differently online, right? There's so much free content around that. We have to come up with innovative ways of kind of actually, you know, getting the resources to do that. I don't have the answers, but that these are the type of things that we actually talk about during the incubator. And there's different distribution models that is, you know, and different markets that are happening that are really exciting. The African film industry is growing and moving, and yeah, the web has kind of opened it up to a global international audience, so we're not restricted to North America.
No, I don't want to cut you. I'm being rude. I cut you, but I have
no,
a question when you finish.
Okay,
the question of International Film Festival. Okay, we have a Caribbean Tales in Toronto. We have the Pan African Film Festival in Los Angeles. We have the Film Festival in Ouagadougou in Burkina Faso, and then there's, you know, all over Africa, and in the Caribbean. What's taking place in the Caribbean in terms of film festivals?
There's a few film festivals. There's the one in Trinidad and Tobago. That's basically right after ours. It's in the end of September, and that's growing as well. There's one in Belize, I believe.
Belize, right, correct.
There's a few growing festivals, and I think the more festivals we actually can create within the region, the better, because then there's more opportunities for filmmakers to screen their films, and actually kind of build sort of a market within the region. But I think that's what I know off the top of my head.
Now, what is the I guess you guys, the people in the incubator, would be discussing Caribbean films in a region like China, India, and Japan. Those are huge markets where, especially Japan, where the love of the Japanese are a set of people that I admire in the sense that they have their own culture. Very strong culture, but at the same time, they are open to they're open to all jazz music, reggae music, hip hop, doo-wop, and all that kind of stuff. Has there been any discussion about how to get Caribbean films into Japan, China, and India? But I know China's a whole different issue.
Well, I mean the interesting thing with the Caribbean is that the Caribbean is connected to a lot of places. I mean, we're connected to Africa, we're connected to China, we're connected to those Caribbean people from all those regions. So there's opportunities to connect with all those markets, in my mind.
I'm laughing because there was a brother, I can't think of his name now, I always talk about him all the time, but he was from Trinidad and Tobago, Chinese, but he ended up in Sun Yat-sen's government in China, but he's was born and reared in Trinidad, but he somehow found himself in the leadership of the government in Sun Yat-sen's China, right.
Yeah, so no, that's definitely stuff that we talk about, basically accessing and trying to get our films to a global, international audience.
And the whole question, that's really a silly question in terms of India and the Caribbean are like, that's an automatic link. What kind of what kind of contact has been made with India in terms of the Indian film industry? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's building with those film festivals. I mean, Bollywood is huge, and not only just Bollywood, but their independent film scene is pretty huge as well. And then also,
Bollywood is actually bigger than Hollywood, isn't it?
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. They make more films. But Nollywood itself too is also booming as well. I think they're kind of, coming up on Bollywood of how many films they make as well. It's kind of a really exciting time within the region, I've met a lot of Caribbean filmmakers who are really, really anxious and want to build an industry within the region. It's as a person who's of Caribbean descent in the diaspora, connecting with those who are in the region is really exciting.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
Yes, I would like, if people want to get connected to the festival, please email me at CaribbeanTales@gmail.com. I also wanted to, I actually forgot to mention, Caribbean Tales actually launched a VOD channel, and it's called CaribbeanTales-TV.com, and we have free online screenings of Caribbean films every Sunday. So if people want to go check it out and check out some of our films, you can do that. If you actually go right now, you could actually screen some films. And that's every Sunday. But the deadline for films, again, for this year's festival is June 1st. And more information of how to do that, please email me at caribbeantales@gmail.com. People want to get to know and connect with the film, The Diaspora Travels Haiti, go to the blog of the production, which is thediasporatravelshaiti.wordpress.com.
Okay, and I wanted to ask you, the last question is related to some program that I'm, and you, I guess you work, we work together every week on Saturday mm-hmm. Morning Live. Next Sunday is Mother's Day. And I'm looking for some songs about mothers from the Caribbean and Africa. I have covered, I've covered, you know, the North American situation, but I'm really looking for some reggae, calypso, and some music about from Africa about Mother's Day. You have any ideas on that? Or when I'm throwing that out, you can email me at.
I'm gonna have to think about that and ask around. you're better at that than me.
You know, there's a whole lot of great music coming out of about mothers all over the place, but I really wanted to put some do an all African, Pan African type of thing on Mother's Day. So I really appreciate you coming on Diaspora Music on Uhuru Radio. We'll bring you back sooner than later. And we will really appreciate you sharing this time with us.
Thank you for having me, Norm.
All right. We have been speaking with Melinda Francis, and I would like to thank Ron Bob Simple for helping us today technically. And we really appreciate Mr. Simple helping us. And Ron Bob Simple can be heard tonight on Golden Oldies, and he's also heard Caribbean Forum on Saturday morning on Uhuru Radio. And Golden, Ron is on the line. Ron, give yourself a plug. How are you doing?
Hey, Norman, I'm doing fine, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Golden Sunday Sounds this evening, May 4th. 7 until 10.
You're not going to get X-rated this week, are you?
No, we're going to get E-rated because our artist in the spotlight this evening is one and only Ella Fitzgerald.
Uh-huh. Well, Ella did some calypso, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
yes.
Ella, I remember I had the pleasure of meeting Oscar Peterson, and Oscar Peterson told me one time that he and Wynton Kelly were on the bus with Ella, and they were speaking patois. You know, Oscar had a kitchen and I think it's one of his parents was from Barbados. Other ones was from Nevis and St. Kitts. No, Barbados. Let me get that right.
Right.
And they were speaking. Wynton Kelly, of course, had the Jamaican Trinidadian background. They were speaking patois, and he was basically saying that Ella was just crying, laughing, you know, that those guys were, you know, because she didn't realize that those brothers had the Caribbean ties, you know.
Here we go. Here we go.
All right, sir. So I really appreciate you hooking me up today, and I guess this is normal.
You're welcome, my brother. I know we had some technical difficulties. We lost power a little earlier because, this weather's just been crazy all over the world, so we've just got to make certain adjustments.
And thank you very much. And
thank you,
Norman Richmond, saying we will see you in the whirlwind. And thank everyone for listening.